The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. Welcome to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel. And yes, it's Thursday evening tonight, and we have a special guest with us. Another special guest. It's quite amazing. I just want to, first of all, give a shout out to Tracy. She manages to organize and get fantastic business leaders. Like last week, where we were in three different places, we got the same thing again tonight. So hopefully will there be no glitches, but if there is, that's the reason. All of us are sitting in our own comfortable places. Craig's in the studio. I'm not quite sure where our guest, who I'll introduce you to, is sitting tonight. And I'm still away. I'm in Umhlanga. And we're doing it from close to the beach. Tonight, we've got Brad Kaftel. And Brad is the managing director of Hatfield Motor Group. And he's been that for the last 27 years. But before I introduce Brad formally, I want to give you the little business story. And this business story is about a little coffee shop who used, and it's a term we came to use during COVID, the word pivot, who managed to pivot. This coffee shop was about 2 years old, and even before COVID was struggling to get enough foot traffic to sell the coffees. And coffees are, you need lots of volume of business to be able to make sufficient to cover your overheads. And this coffee shop was struggling because of the bigger chains doing the business. And then COVID hit. And during the pandemic, this owner had to close her doors. And she thought, what could I do? And she realized that people still wanted coffee. So instead of waiting for people to come to her, which they could no longer do, she decided to go to the people. And in the area, she gave advertisements of bringing fresh coffee and pastries to people's homes. And all of a sudden, that became a bigger business. And together with that, she gave thank you notes and all sorts of things. And that became a much, much bigger business. In fact, it was double what her pre-COVID business was. And when the market opened up again, people were so thankful that she became the popular coffee shop, not the others. So the takeaway from that, excuse the pun, is first of all, to stay close to your customers. Know what they want and try to give it to them. The second thing is try and adapt as quickly as possible to a changing market. And even a small business can reinvent itself. And if you reinvent yourself and you become creative, and sometimes you've got to be bold, you could create a whole new business. And what you wanted initially becomes reality. And the theme that seems to be coming through from a lot of these business stories is sometimes the thing that you fear the most, sometimes the problem that happens the most, is what helps you grow. So that's the story from the little business story. But with us, as I said, is Brad Kaftel. Evening, Brad.
Hello, David, and good evening to the listeners. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And Brad is somebody who's in business, but he started out, he actually wanted to be an industrial psychologist, wanted to study industrial psychology. Through circumstances, he managed to join Imperial, and he was there for 11 years, and then left Imperial and opened up a motor dealership. And it's called Hatfield because it was in Hatfield in Pretoria. And over time was growing it. And then in November 2021, he bought out Fury Motors. And from starting from one motor dealership, he now has over 50 franchises. He's selling 17 different car brands. Well, while we're talking about the numbers, I'll add a couple more numbers. He's been married for 40 years. He's got four kids. He's got six grandkids. But he's going to tell you, how do you build a life like that? So, Brad, if you can just take us back and talk us through your life of how did you decide to open up that one store, and then how did it grow from there onwards?
Sure. Okay. Is that one or 10 questions? But
It's about 1,000 questions, but let's start in the beginning.
I mean, for me, it was look. I as you mentioned, I studied at university and did that for a couple of years, and then just looked for a position and found one at a company. It was actually Safikon Investments. It was a listed company, and they had motor interests, and they were bought out by Beard a few years later, but spent 11 and a half years there. And it was just circumstantial. I mean, I think at that point, I was quite happy to remain in the corporate space, and I'd grown within that company, and it was just circumstantial. And I think at that point, they went through a bit of a rough time, and not the dealership I was running, but I wasn't that happy in terms of the structures they had in place. And then I approached Volkswagen, and they took a year of negotiation and discussions with them to get the one dealer. And then they kind of said, "Have you got the money?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, we got the money," but we didn't have any money. We had to borrow all the money, and that was a challenge. We had to convince the banks to lend us that kind of money, and to start up a dealership, which is capital intensive. We had to build a dealership in Hatfield. We had to buy the land. We had to borrow the money to build the dealership, and then we had to have the financial capital to run the business. But
So
that's where it started.
just before you go on, how do you I speak to many people who run their businesses, and you talk about it, oh, well, we had to borrow the money and then we started the business. But that's a massive, massive, massive decision. Can you think back, and I know it's like 27, 28 years ago, but can you think back, what was the tipping point? What gave you the confidence to say, I'm going to back myself and I'm going to put the money into this?
It was total naivety, to be honest with you. I mean, I had no idea what I was getting into, to be honest. I think I'd work in the corporate space. You didn't have to manage your cash flow; that was done for you. You didn't have to worry about funding. Imperial Head was a listed company, and that wasn't an issue. You just had to deliver the sales, and then you were a hero. So it was, you kind of. I was in my 30s, and I kind of did feel I wanted to go out on my own. Nothing wrong with the corporate space. There's many top business people in that space, and that was an option for me. But I just kind of, I can tell you a few stories about how we got that money, but it was a struggle. It really wasn't easy. And I think what happened was that we did it in steps. So we didn't say, okay, well, here's our business plan, and this is our total funding that we need. And that would have been something I would have done when I did my MBA, but that was all theoretical. In the real world, we did it in little steps. So the first step was to actually get the funding to build the building, okay, and to get the loan for that. And that was the biggest hurdle. It was a real challenge. And I was struggling on that front. And then, I was a comrades runner. I mean, I'd run like 16 comrades. At that point, I'd run, I don't know, seven or eight by then. And there was a guy that I ran with, and he was a senior manager at APSA. And in desperation, I called him and said to him, "Do you know anyone at APSA?" Because I was dealing with APSA, just happened to be with them. There was no prior loyalty to APSA at all. And the next day, I had the finance in place. It was just someone who I knew put in a good word for me, and they agreed to fund the building. So there was so that interestingly, if I go off at a slight tangent, I once about 2 years after we'd opened, I was in the gym, and I bumped into a guy called Dolph Wright, who was the managing director of what is today APSA Vehicle and Asset Finance. And we got chatting. It was Bankson at the time, and we got chatting. And he said to me, "You know, Brad, do you know how you got that original finance for that property?" I said, "No, Dolph, I really don't know." And he said, "Well, you spoke to your running friend Martin, who was a senior manager in the Absa structure, and Martin called him and asked him if he could help." And I said, "Okay, well, thanks, Dolph. You obviously did put in a word and you did help. But what made you?" I asked him then. I said, "What made you decide to help? What was the what made you decide to, to use your influence to get this finance for the property?" That was step one. And he said to me, he said, "You know, Brad, when I look at a business, I look at three things." I said, "Okay, well, what is that?" He said, "Well, the first thing I look at is the product." And in that instance, the product was Volkswagen. And Volkswagen is a good product. So there was a tick as far as that was concerned. I said, "Okay, what was the second thing?" He said, "Well, I looked at the area. And the area was Hatfield in Pretoria. It's a good market. So you got a good product in a good market." I said, "Okay." And I said, "The third thing is I look at the jockey. That's you. I didn't know you that well, but I'd heard about you. You ran a good show for Lindsay Saker, who I worked for in the Imperial stable. And I felt that was a tick as well. So there were three ticks and we're on our way." So that was the first step in terms of getting the finance. Maybe a bit lucky. It was someone that I knew through running, who was quite a lot older than me, but he did manage to keep up with us, a really good runner. He passed away about a year or two ago, a guy, a great guy, Martin Loubser. Martin Crowcombe, Martin Loubser, excuse me. But Martin Crowcombe, great friend he became. But anyway, that was the first step. And I think that's what we did. Obviously, then we built the building, and then came the next step. We had to find the funding to run the business. So, in motor, you generally fund your stock through a facility. They call it a floor plan. It's like a revolving credit. That's how it works. You pay the interest, and when the car gets sold, you pay off the debt. It's as easy as that. So, of course, we ran to Absa. Now that they were funding the property, we said, "Well, look, we obviously have to run a business here because we've got to pay the property back." So to get the floor plan, that was fairly easy. And we kind of got that started. So we had capital for stock. And then what we did find is that when we did start it, we were struggling for cash flow. We had our stock funded, but you needed some money to run the business, and we didn't have any money. So funding the cash flow was a challenge. It wasn't easy. And if I tell you what saved us, you would never believe it. I'll give you one, I'll give you three guesses, David. You'll never believe what saved us. And I'll tell you what it was. It was VAT, VAT. That's what saved us.
That saved you.
That saved
Just,
us. So
I mean, people who know me know that I do the dad joke. So I'm going to ask you, what was that?
well, value-added tax, it saved us. So what happened was that typically these cars come offline from Volkswagen, who was the principal, and they invoice the floor plan. And when they invoice to the floor plan, they get paid, and it sits on your floor plan revolving credit facility, to try and explain it in layman's terms. And what would happen then was that you actually funded that, including that, okay? And it sat on this floor plan. And of course, what would happen is when you start a business, you go out and buy whatever it is, 50 vehicles. There's quite a big element of VAT in that, and that VAT actually was sitting in the debt in the floor plan facility. And about 2 months later, we were really struggling. What happened was the receiver of revenue refunded us our VAT claim, and it was a substantial amount. But you can work out the average selling price in those days was probably 200,000 rand, and if you add on, it wasn't, I think it was 13% does that, but that's 26,000 in a car. And if we had 80 cars in stock, you can do the math. It was a big number, and that gave us a it came at the right moment when we were really, really struggling, and that came into our bank account. Obviously, you're going to pay it all back as you sell the cars, but that would be over the next 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 months as you went, and that saved us. I've got to tell you, back
Wow.
then,
Wow.
VAT.
Now, I've always heard the story of the tax is killing our business. I think this is the first time that I've heard of the tax saving our business. And I'm going to.
My finance director came down into my office, and I said to him, "But I just looked at the bank account, and what is all this money?" He said, "That's the VAT refund." I said, "Ah, our prayers have
Amazing.
been answered. We're fine."
So I want to unpack that a little bit further, and then how did you go from there to grow it more? But we'll do that after the ad break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. This is the AutJet Business Show, and we're talking to Brad Kaftel, the Managing Director of Hatfield Motor Group. And Brad was just being sharing with us the story of how he started the Hatfield Motor Group. And the first thing he said when he started going, it was naivety. He kind of had this idea, and without actually knowing what the story was, he launched into it. And then he said, it's not about doing everything at once. It's little steps, doing it in steps. And along the way, when you start doing things, opportunities open up. And one of those opportunities was a friend, and he got his funding actually through a friend who introduced him to someone from the bank. And it's very interesting. You actually unpacked very nicely for us from the bank's point of view of what do they look at when they're trying to fund the business. And you said to us that this bank manager said that you first look at the product. Is the product good? And it was Volkswagen. It's a good product. Then you look at the area, and you were in Hatfield, and that's a good area. And then you look at the jockey, the person who was yourself, and he had heard about you, but also because the recommendation came through a friend, that also helped. So another thing in business is around the networking. And then you got that because you were successful in getting the funding through APSA, you then grew that relationship because they funded the building. Now they could fund the business. And for me, the most astounding thing was the story that you told at the end. From a cash flow point of view, every business needs cash flow. And one of the biggest killers in any business is cash flow. More businesses fail because of cash flow than any other single reason. And using the money in the business is what we call bootstrapping. But for you, you had a big VAT claim, and then you got the refund. And as I said to you just before the break, it's the first time ever I've heard about that tax is saving the business rather than destroying the business. That's so
incredible.
Take us through a little bit further on with your journey.
So we had the one, you know, we look, I'm not the kind of guy to put my name on the wall. I like to be pretty low profile. I don't do these radio interviews easily. I think Kathy Kale has been asking me to do something like this for about 15 years. I said no. But anyway, here I am. But so I think we had to get that first business firing. I mean, that's what we had to do. It was one entity. I was very hands-on. I was on the floor. I was making all the decisions. I was the sales manager, the dealer principal, the owner, and very connected to everything. And we tried to differentiate ourselves on a customer service ticket, and we put systems in place in our service departments, and we started getting unbelievable customer ratings. We did. And I then went out and really poached, I'd say that's the correct word, poached the best salespeople in Pretoria, the best service people, and the business started to run quickly. We started to do really, really well. McCarthy had a monopoly of Volkswagen in Pretoria, and we were the competitor, and that we weren't best mates. It was just like that, you know. We're a lot friendlier today. We've grown and got a bit more less emotional, shall we say. But nonetheless, we grew that business really, really nicely. And I think the second year we were in business, we were dealer of the year. And we grew that to selling about 100 cars a month.
And wow.
It took time, lots of hard work. I mean, my typical day back then was run 15 Ks at 5:15 in the morning and finish at whatever, 20 past six, and get to the office, and I'd shower there, be at my desk, not long after 7:30, maybe 7:35. That's driving to Pretoria every day. We never left there before 6:15 at night. Weekend working was normal. Evening working was normal. Going on holiday and working was normal. I don't know anyone who's achieved success without really hard work. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how smart you think you are. It's all about hard work. And we grew that business for for 5 years, and we became fairly formidable, but one outlet only. We bought some houses next door and grew the footprint. And then what happened was quite a turning point for us was that Volkswagen called me in, and they said to me that the company I previously had worked for and the dealership I previously had worked for, they had a fallout and they terminated that franchise. It was in Johannesburg, and would I be interested in that business? So I said, yes, definitely, thanks very much. They said to me, it was quite interesting, and it shows you how they underestimated us. They were like, look, we're not sure if you'll be able to manage a second business. You manage one business really, really well, but we're not sure if you'll be able to manage two businesses really. It was like, I almost packed up laughing. But anyway, the truth is, we said, no, I think we can do that. And they said, have you got the money? Believe me, we didn't. To start a business takes years. We were making ends meet and we were profitable, but we certainly weren't shooting the lights out that way. We had a lot of debt. We hadn't built up equity yet, and to pay off the property, and so it goes. So we didn't really have much, but we thought we could manage a second one. And then they said, the meeting was literally 5 minutes, and they said to me, but there's a but. I said, yeah, what's the but? They said, you can only have 74.9% of this business. I said, okay. And I said, tell me more. And they said, we want you to get a black partner that would own 25.1%. He has to make an equity investment. And that was the start of a part. I found a gentleman that I was very good friends with, a guy by the name of Joe Mtimunye. Very good friends. We were running friends. We actually run Comrades together. Joe's run 20 Comrades. I stopped at 16. We were of similar ability, both of us chasing silver medals here and there. He had a few more than me, but we were good friends first. And we had a friendship that went back a few years, and I approached Joe, and he did invest. We became partners only in the one business, not in Pretoria, but in Bryanston. And from there, we did take on another one or two or three franchises with Volkswagen. And in 2006, I said to Joe, you've got to buy 25.1% of Pretoria, and you've got to create one business, because ultimately, it's complicated having multiple companies. Every time we do a tender, I've got to do it 5 times. It's driving me crazy. So in 2006, we set up one business, Hatfield Motor Group. I think our actual company name is Hatfield Holdings at the time. And Joe and his wife, Umotso, through their company, owned 25.1%. And we kept the balance of 74.9%. And we remain great friends. The partnership still exists. It started in 2003, and that's 22 years later. And we've never had an argument. We've had robust discussions, certainly, but we've never had an argument, and they're non-executive directors. And it's been a great partnership, and we have grown it materially from those days. We had two dealerships at the beginning, and we remain good partners today and best friends. And that has helped us on our journey, I must say.
So you started with two, and today you've got over 50, is that right?
Yeah, so the big turning point for us was in 2021. So look, along the way, well, to give you some idea and your listeners some idea, it's not just plain sailing. Just understand. So when we start, just to give you a sense, when we start our first dealership in 1998, in September 1998, now I don't know how many of your listeners were around in September 1998, but the prime rate of interest peaked at 25.5%. Okay.
Wow.
And that's a big number. And I can tell you a quick story that when we got the funding from APSA, the prime rate of interest a year, 9 months before we opened, because we had to build the place, the prime rate of interest was 16%. And APSA called me up and said to me, they'd like to fix the interest rate at 19% for 2 years, okay, from when the loan started. Now, the talk in the country at that stage was that interest rates were going down, and a bank will never suggest you fix interest rates unless they think rates are going down. It's simple. I mean, and they generally don't get it wrong, but they got this one right. And of course, I said no. I said no. Okay. And of course, we hadn't even opened our doors, and interest rates went to 25.5%. And I think our bond payment went up by 80%. I mean, it was just, we hadn't even started. We were literally bankrupt. We hadn't even opened the doors yet. So I went to APSA and we had to negotiate. And a couple of meetings later, and they kind of said to me, all right, look, just pay what you're going to pay with as if the interest rate was 16%. This is a bit of a luck in the running here. And what you're short, we'll just add to the capital. So I thought, oh, I'll pay this building off in the year 3000 at that rate, but I didn't have much choice. Okay. And then what happened was that the next day, the relationship manager I was dealing with at APSA phoned me, and I took the call, and he said, you're not going to believe what's happened. I said, tell me. He said, well, he's going into the system just to make the note that I'm not going to be in arrears and I only pay at 16%, which or whatever it was. And he says, and what he's realized on the system is that when I told him that I didn't want to fix the rate, he by mistake left it fixed at 19%. And I didn't have to pay 25.5%. I'm fixed for 2 years at 19%. So I don't know if that was divine intervention or what, but it was a more stroke of luck, but it did help us. So it just gives you, we kind of got through that. And 2 years later, interest rates were well down. Actually below 16%, probably at about 15, and we did get through that. But along the way, I mean, we've had other financial crises. I think 2007 to 2009, significant crisis. Every time you put on the TV, the world was ending. We had to navigate through that, and I can assure you, it wasn't easy. And we weren't off the size we are today. And then, of course, what happened? And that I think that's the turn where I'm leading to the turning point was COVID. And you mentioned the story of a coffee shop and how they pivoted and how that helped them in COVID. So what happened to us was that, well, it's quite a frightening experience when you're on the beach in December in Mauritius, and then in March, 3 months later, your business is closed. Every showroom you have, at that point, we had in 2020, we had 10 dealerships, and they were all closed. I mean, we had to close them and kind of try and navigate through that. So thankfully in South Africa, we were able to get back to business within 2 months. We were very fortunate from that perspective compared to other countries. But it was a trying time when you're sitting at home, not allowed to go outside, and you're wearing a mask and your business is shut. And you've got, I think at that stage, we had about 1,000 people working for us or 900 people working for us. So believe you me, there. So we've been through those times, but like, and it's similar to your message and your example that you mentioned at the start. So what happened was that we came across this Fury Group, and what happened to this Fury Group? But they had sold their business. They had 13 dealerships. They had sold their business to another listed company. I'm not going to mention who. They had sold to them, and the deal was done. We didn't. We weren't even looking to buy anyone. The deal was done. This is in 20. We come across them during COVID, late second half of 2020. And what has happened is the party that bought their business has reneged. They've said, look, it's COVID, the world's ending. They can't spend this kind of money. And when things settle, they'll get back to the table. Okay. Now, the seller, being the guys from the Fury guys, they're very honorable people, and they didn't like that. So they canceled the deal. Of course, we arrived in early 2021. We're still in COVID, okay? And we started negotiating with them. And I did see that as a huge opportunity. I did, because they had multiple brands, and it was an opportunity for us. We had Volkswagen and Audi, but here was an opportunity to go to Ford and Suzuki and Mazda and Isuzu and Haval and Chery and Omoda and you name it. You know, MG we've got now, and Geely's coming, and we've got a lot of brands, you know. And that opened the door for us. And I said to my partner, we must do this deal. We have to do this deal. It's a once in a lifetime chance to really expand our footprint. And if we have to do this individually by buying multiple dealers, that could take 40 years. And I don't think I'm going to live another 40 years. So we had to do that deal. And then literally in 2021, we bought this Fury Group in the middle of COVID, and our financier was Investec. So we still have a good relationship with APSA, but an equally good one with Investec. And they actually financed our transaction, and they actually financed it based on our Hatfield, existing Hatfield numbers. And And we've grown it since we arrived at Fury. We have grown it on a sustained basis. We've taken on additional brands. We've bought additional properties. And here we are in 2025.
So I want to ask you, I want to go back a little bit in, you were talking in the beginning, you said you're selling, when you first started, you were selling 100 cars a month. Now, how are you different from other businesses? How do you grow to 100 cars a month? What, I mean, you show beautiful cars. Why should they walk into your store and not McCarthy? Why should they buy from you and not McCarthy? What do you do? If I'm looking to learn from you for my business, which is not cars, but what, how do you make sales? How do you grow like that?
So, do you want the answer for then or now or both?
Both.
So, look, in 1998, it was a very different world. There was no Google and Facebook and Twitter or X, as they call it now. So there, what did we do? Probably two things. So, firstly, we differentiated our service. So what we did in our service department was revolutionary, and no one's ever copied it in 26 years. We made our technicians frontline people as well as technicians. So when someone came into our workshop, they worked directly with the technician who's fixing the car, one-to-one. No miscommunication and better accountability. So we came up with something that was different. Our competitors hated it because it's probably not as profitable a system as a standard workshop, but we did that. We believed in it. We came up with it ourselves, and we went with it, and we worked on it. And we still run that today.
What's the benefit of doing it that way?
Well, what happens is when you drive in, you now meet the technician who's going to work on your car. He gives you his business card. He's dressed in a golf shirt and black pants, and he's got his name. You've got his cell number. And we're going to take a pause and get back to that.
So I think
Okay.
let's do that, as you can see. So Craig's holding up a sign saying ad break. So let's take an ad break and then we'll discuss it when we get back.
The AutoJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel, and you're listening to the AutoJet Business Show. And together we're listening to Brad Kaftel, the Managing Director of Hatfield Motor Group. Now, when you're talking about motor cars, I shouldn't really use the term smash, but I want to tell you about smashing for a cause and to change lives. So AutoJet is holding a paddle event. It's a paddle SA, it's an Aut SA paddle fundraiser. And that's going to be on Saturday, the 31st of August. And you can join in, and the proceeds will go to AutoJet. And that's a division of Aut South Africa, and they help the SMEs thrive. So if you want to go to that, please get hold of, you can get hold of AutoJet, you can message Helene at autsa.org.za or log into autsa.org.za and you can get the details over there and register to play. And to smash, but not smash your car, that's for sure. Brad, just before the break, you were talking about the business and I asked you about how do you grow a business? And you were talking about how you did it then and how you would do it now. But in the break, I was thinking that a lot of people learn how to run a business. But in your case, it sounds like you got a business because of running. It sounds like the people you were involved in were all friends from running. And
No.
how your life would have been different if you hadn't run Comrades. And
No.
you've been together for so many years that you now call each other comrades, I suppose.
No,
But you
that's
are
pretty true.
comrades in arms, basically. But you were talking about, I asked you about the 100 cars a month and how you did it. And you spoke about the technicians becoming the salespeople.
Yes,
Just
so we
unpack
did
that.
that. Yeah, so the technicians, and we still do that today across our group. So you're driving your deal direct to the technician. He's responsible. He fixes your car. If you want to know if your car's ready, you phone him on his cell phone and ask him. Don't phone me. I won't even know his name. Phone him. And that's what we set up a system. Our competitors hated it because we got the best customer ratings. Customers would deal direct. It was better accountability and better quality. That's what came out of it. Best trained technicians, the best paid technicians, and the best quality. And I think that was what. But that wasn't all. So I also found a fantastic site on the corner of two main roads in Pretoria and bought the site. So the location was fantastic. Okay. And that's a key factor in retail. It's all about location is critical. But yes, then internally, the technicians. And then I went and I poached the best salespeople, but my God, was that hard. But I had to put myself out there and I had to do it myself and I had to spend time and hours. And many people said no. And then I would leave it and I'd go back a month later. But over the first 6 months of being in business, I built up a star-studded team of people, skillful professionals, male, female, of all colors. And that helps.
So I want to ask you, when you say you went and you poached the top salespeople, what makes a person a top salesperson?
Ones that are selling the most cars, David, it's easy as that. You just
But
it's how
that's
many
the
cars you
outcome.
sell, it was how many cars and
But
then the
that's the
tenth
outcome.
was where that was outcome based. In
That's
those
the
days,
outcome.
it was outcome based, yes.
What's the income? Sort of what are they doing to become top salesmen rather than what others are doing? So if I
So
go
I
and I
think
try to sell,
it's
what could I
service.
be doing differently here?
The combination of customer service, product knowledge, being genuine, build, having a long-term view, building up a client base, getting referral business, getting repeat business. It's not something that happens in 5 minutes. It's something that happens over years and years and years. And your best salespeople have been at it for time, not someone who started yesterday. It takes time to build up that client base. So I did take from the competition. I had no choice. I couldn't take from myself. I just opened the doors. I didn't have anyone to take from. So I went out and took from the competition and obviously wasn't the most popular person in Pretoria in 1998. And then the third thing I'd say, if you ask for one other thing back in those days, it was the stock. So you've got to get the right stuff and you've got to stay ahead. And there were various things both on new cars and on the pre-owned side to get the best stock. I had a deal with Volkswagen. I got 30 demos a month from them for pre-owned. And on the new car stuff, we had sufficient floor plan to go out there aggressively and stock up and get the best stuff. So I'd say that was probably the critical issue, the critical factors back then. Now, today, sure, today is a very, very different world today. So I'd say, so what do we do today to generate these sales? I'd say we still have our technician system in place and our competitors have never been able to copy it. And it does give us the best customer rating. So we call ourselves rated number one in service across all our brands. And we can stand by that. And thereafter, I'd say the other critical things that we do today is we're super aggressive on our advertising and we're super aggressive on our selling process. We've got software that monitors the customer, the calls, the WhatsApps, the emails, the quotes, the contact ratio, the finance applications. So we're very good on that. We've developed that in-house over time. So I would say when it comes to we do still stock, on a rich basis. We carry the stock, not scared to do that. And we have very good relationships with these manufacturers because we do deliver on the sales front. So I'd say that's become a very key strength for us. And once again, you're right, location, still, we have got fantastic sites across Gauteng, Johannesburg, and Pretoria. And we also have dealerships now in KZN, and we've got a few dealerships in the Western Cape as well. So, but yes, it's all about location still. That hasn't changed. But I'd say that the digital world and playing on auto traders and Instagram and the rest of it, that takes enormous skill. And I think we've built up terrific expertise in that area. And I think we are ahead of our competitors. But believe you me, they will catch. So you've got to think of the next step continuously. You always have to stay one or two steps ahead, because if you sit back and think you've arrived, believe you me, you won't have arrived sooner than later. So maybe does that answer you?
Yes, it definitely does. Thank you. So, one of the economic indicators, when they look at the economy and how the economy is performing, one of the key indicators is they look at new car sales, which means that it is heavily influenced by when people have disposable income or not disposable income. And if people don't have the money, they're not going to buy the cars. Do you agree with that indicator, first of all? And what happens when the economy goes down? Do you just move to more used car sales, or does it actually affect overall sales?
So I think what we would try and do is try and outperform the market generally. We wouldn't give up that easily, So yes, you're quite right. Typically what happens is that when interest rates go up, your sales will come down, because people are paying more for everything that they have in the world, in terms of their homes or their credit cards. They're paying more. So typically when interest rates go up, your sales will come down. And when interest rates are declining, your sales will go up. That's how it works. So what we would try and do is to outperform the market and I think we have managed to do that certainly in the last 10 years. So when interest rates were on the rise, we were able to keep our sales fairly constant, certainly when growing. And now I think as interest rates have come down, we have grown. So we will fight to outperform the market because try and take away from the competition. And we do. The other point is we have fantastic relationships with the various banks in terms of providing finance for our customers. And we've got the scale to compete very, very aggressively on that front. So
fantastic.
Yes, but yeah, we fight on. That's the recipe for us.
Excellent. And just talking about economic indicators, I've got another sign from Craig in the Glen Hazel studio to say we need to go to an ad break. And when we come back from the ad break, I'm going to ask you questions just around your life philosophy and business.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. And together we're listening to Brad Kaftel. And he's talking about and he's spoken about the business that he has in building the whole motor industry and grown it tremendously. And throughout the whole discussion, if I have to take one thing through the golden thread for me that's running through it, it's relationships. And it's relationships both in and out. It's in getting the product in, but also relationships in getting it out. And Brad, you told us earlier, or you told me beforehand, that you've got, I think you said you've got 6 grandkids. What do they call you? Have you got a granddad name?
Grandpa, Baba. I think one grandkids calls me. Otherwise, I think it's Grandpa.
Grandpa, okay. So if you had to take the lessons that you have over the last, since 1998 in your business, and you had to just think of the lessons that you would want your grandkids to know, that when they ask, what did Grandpa say? Well, what would those lessons about business and life be?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that come to mind. I would say the first thing is that, whatever space you're in business, you've got to manage risk. I think that's something that's maybe intuitive, but you've got to manage risk. People say, oh, well, and everyone's got a different appetite for risk. That's okay. And everyone's got a place in the world. And everyone, not to say if you're in this industry or you work in corporate, you're better off than you're not. You must just be happy in your life. But I would say you've got to manage risk. And that means possibly that you've got a plan B and a plan C. So you may decide that you're going to buy the Fury Group as an example, okay? But we kind of know that if that business just breaks even, we'll be able to pay for the loan. It's managed. We weren't going in and saying, all right, we're buying this thing, we're paying so much money, and we've got to double the sales, in order to pay for the loan. That would be reckless. Okay, so I'm saying you've got to manage the risk, and you've got to think ahead. You know, you've got to have the ability to think, okay, you know, this is how it's gonna, I think it's gonna play out, and these are the potential options that I've got as we go. What's your plan A? What'll happen, and what's plan B, C, D? You've got to think ahead and be able to apply your mind to that. You can't just dive in and hope. I was maybe a bit like that in my 30s, but I'm definitely not like that today. So I think if there's any advice, you've got to manage the risk. I think the other thing I would say to them is you never stop learning. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you're in your 30s, 40s, 60s, or 70s, you never stop learning, and never ever resign yourself to not having an open mind. You know, things change. You have to adapt. And the day that you stop adapting, then I think you need to get on the beach and call it. You know, so I think you've got to have an open mind, and you've really got to learn. And I think the other thing I would tell them is that if you're going to be in a leadership position, you can never manage by consensus. There's certain decisions that I've got to make. And yes, I must consult. And yes, I can talk to my partner, my business partner. And yes, I'm going to talk to, if it's an operational matter, I'm going to talk to my key franchise executives. And I'm going to talk to my chief financial officer. And I'm going to get their opinions. But I'm not going to make the decision based on consensus, because my experience is whenever I've done that, I got it wrong. And I have done that, to be honest with you, in my earlier years. And you get that wrong. So I think you can take the input, but ultimately you've got to make the call, and you've got to believe in yourself and go for it. So I think that's what I would tell them. And I think finally I would say to them, you've got to enjoy every minute of every day. If you and if you're not enjoying the work you do, find something else to do. You know, so if you've got to love life, and you've got to enjoy every single day. And I think the last point I would possibly communicate or give to them is, I think you've got to balance your life. And I think that was the point you said. You've got a family. You can't just work. Yes, you've got to work hard, but you've got to make time for your family. You've got to make time to go on holidays, and you've got to make time for recreation. You've got to have a balanced life. Work hard, sure, maybe have less sleep, but you've got to have a balanced life. And I think that's quite critical. And I think that would be a key message to my grandchildren.
Wow, that's incredible. I want to just repeat what you've said in terms of the, let's call it the five lessons. First of all, you need to think ahead. And while thinking ahead, still manage the risk of what you're doing, thinking ahead with a plan A and plan B. Never stop learning. Always have an open mind and adapt to things as they're changing. And leadership, very important, I think what you said, is the leadership needs to be your leadership. You can get input, but you can't manage by consent. At the end, you've got to make an executive decision, and then try and enjoy every moment that you're doing it, because that's why you're working, is to enjoy it, and then still somehow create that balance. I think these are the five leadership lessons, if we can call it that, from Brad Kaftel. And I just want to thank you so much for the input that you've given us, for the time and the lessons that we've learned through that. So we've been listening to Brad Kaftel, the managing director of Hatfield Motor Group, and he's been doing that for the last 27 years. I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Orchard Business Show, and let's do business.